Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Feeling very silly today, Adam. Feeling like a silly person who makes silly mistakes.
I love your word for dumb. That is a much kinder... Is this a therapy thing? Like, is that just using kind vocabulary at yourself? Because I don't have those tools.
I don't know. I mean, I thought we could maybe just have a very silly Marin today, because what we're going to give the people is not exactly a new episode.
I think to the vast majority of friends of DeSoto, this will be a new episode, and here's why.
Yeah. Explain this silly shit.
Let me tell you and all the friends of DeSoto how my day has gone today. Last night, I'm editing the Anson Mount episode until late.
Yeah.
And it needs credits. And you and I have sort of decided that the next episode, that the episode to follow, was going to be a TOS episode that would make Uhura a central figure. I know there aren't any of those episodes that actually qualify as that, but that's what we were going to do.
We wanted to do a tribute episode, and we thought we'd pick out a TOS episode in which she plays a big role, and
Mirror Mirror was that episode. We were like, that's a great idea. That's an episode we haven't done before, at least according to our computer records.
Yeah. Yeah. Which are not good records. These are the records that we've been keeping, not the records that like Wendy has been keeping, which are actually good.
The AW records are much better than the BW records. And so you and I started watching Mirror Mirror and were filled with deja vu.
Yeah, I knew that I'd seen the episode. You know, at some point I did watch through the original series, not for a podcast.
How dare you?
But I didn't. This is before I even had a Star Trek podcast, Adam. I just watched it for funsies when it became available on Netflix back in the day.
Star Trek as fun, you say.
Yeah.
And not career.
So I was sitting there going like, man, like I know I've seen this. And I had a sneaking suspicion that we'd reviewed this episode before, but the computer said otherwise. So I was like, maybe I'm just remembering it from when I watched it for funsies.
Yeah. Yeah, until about 20 minutes in, I hit pause and I was like, fuck this. I'm doing the deep dive into my own notes.
Yeah.
And I searched my own notes and I found all the same jokes. from a notes document I had from 2018. Ben, The Greatest Discovery was only a couple months old at this point when the show reached its first Max Fun Drive and we decided to do something fun to reward the people who supported the show. A show at the time which no one knew would become the sensation that it's become.
The smash
hit. This is the hit new Star Trek podcast.
Yeah. So we did, in fact, record Mirror Mirror, but it's been behind the paywall this whole time, and a lot of people haven't heard our review of that episode.
It's been buried under 4 years of Max Fun bonus episodes. It might as well be in the center of the earth. On the Max Fun bonus feed. It's why not too long ago we announced the Uxbridge Shimoda bonus feed, Ben.
Right. So take a trip back with us in the Wayback Machine as we review Mirror Mirror. I guess we could have just recorded another review of it. But instead, we're just going to present this warmed over old episode as a new episode here in the main feed.
I listened to the entire episode. Very funny.
Oh, good. So he still had it back then.
Oh, yeah. It's before the light went out.
Amazing. Well, that'll be a nice refreshing thing to put in the main feed also.
Yeah. Yeah. A nice boost.
Well, a bit of a relief also because we are just scrambling to get enough stuff recorded for this family leave I'm about to take. And a needed respite from all of the rushing around. So without further ado, and in memory of the late, great Nichelle Nichols, we present our old review of Star Trek, the original series, season 2, episode 4, Mirror, Mirror.
We're on the Halcon planet surface. It's sort of a gazebo playset.
Yeah, we kind of come in media res, don't we? I restarted the episode because I was like, did Netflix think I was like in the middle of this? I didn't know 60s TV had cool openings like this.
When you're doing a deal for Dilithium, you wanna do that deal al fresco. You wanna take some crisp white wine outside, maybe some wicker furniture.
Yeah,
really chop it up. That's what they're doing here, except an ion storm approaches and it's dropping all sorts of thunderstorm bangers on them. It's sort of encouraging them to wrap up their conversation so the Enterprise crew can leave. And that crew's made up of Kirk and Scotty and Dr. McCoy and Uhura.
The Halcon leader guy that they're talking to says that he can't part with any dilithium on behalf of the Federation because he's just too worried that the Federation will use it to do anything bad. And the Halcons really pride themselves on having a history of total peace.
Yeah, what a bunch of pussies.
Hey, man, Dan Savage would say they're a bunch of testes.
Right.
Pussies are very strong, Adam.
It's true. And they are. Kirk is down there and he's trying to plead his case. He's like, we promise, we pinky swear, the Federation is made up of good people. We're not a warrior race of genocidal maniacs. We just want to use these crystals to get around the galaxy. Certainly you can see that. And Tharn, the lead Halcon, who I guess has become their leader due to his advanced age.
It's a gerontocracy?
Yeah. He's like, I'd love to believe you, but I really can't. It's really left kind of open. It's kind of like a breakup that one person really doesn't want to happen. The breakup E is like, no, like you should think about it. Like, but the breakup R is like, no, it's over. Really.
When may we resume discussion?
He pays some lip service to the idea that they'll give it a little bit more consideration, but he's like, don't hold your breath, Kirk.
Don't drive by my house. Stop calling. I'll call you.
Will, are you going to go to the gasworks tonight?
And as they're getting into beam-up formation, we haven't really talked about how, like, sometimes you beam away and it's like you're in the midst of a Star Trek fight and you're falling off of a balcony. But most of the time, if you're beaming up, you, like, walk 4 or 5 feet away from everybody else and get in a little cluster.
Yeah.
You, like, try to mimic having the transporter pad.
Yeah, like, I sort of expected them to pace some steps away from each other to get it exact.
Yeah, like arm's length, like reaching out in all directions, making sure.
There was that embarrassing moment where Scotty beamed over the stairs and then fell into the transporter room. That's no fun.
They're getting ready to beam up and the Halcon guy Tharn is like, hey, by the way, you guys have that big crazy ship in orbit. You could just kill us and take the dilithium. And Kirk very smugly goes, yeah, and we're not gonna. So maybe consider that when you're considering who you're giving the mining rights to.
Boy, smug is the right word. He is peanut buttered in that attitude, no matter what universe he's in. I don't know how much original series you've ever seen, but I'm just going to say it, Ben. I don't think I've seen an entire original series episode. All I've seen are the movies.
Consider that.
Yeah, the original series cast for me is the movie cast, and
yeah,
they're all like the movies are all about like being old and like slipping into obscurity and stuff.
And as a teenager, that really spoke to me.
Yeah.
But the confidence of this crew and of Kirk especially was a deterrent for me in watching it.
I also just love the color in this show. Like it is so vivid, and these are the like HD retransfers of the footage, and they really did a nice job on the color timing and everything, just making everything pop.
It really looks Wizard of Ozzy to me at times.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that suffers a little bit from HD because like they definitely were not planning on anybody seeing the makeup in this high of resolution. Yeah. It is slathered on with a trowel.
That Halkin outside playset doesn't look any worse than a season one playset of TNG, though. Like,
no, yeah, it's the same. Like the psych is 50 feet from the back of their head. And
so much of it was very familiar to me in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how, I mean, I think there were a lot of people still around from the TOS production working on TNG when it started.
The grip guy's like, I have all that stuff in my truck still. I never threw it out.
Yeah. Close proximity psych? Check. This looks like Star Trek.
I only have 20 feet. You're going to have to get close.
So, Ion Storm, same thing that was happening when Lorca beamed off of his ship in Disco. You remember Disco's the thing that happened years before this?
Yeah.
Ion Storm is raging over the planet, and they beam up, and when they beam up, their costumes have changed. They're looking at a goateed Spock. A lot of things are going weird.
Uhura is fully midriffed out.
Yeah.
All of the women of the Mirror Universe are showing midriff.
It's a choice that they did not choose to keep in Star Trek Discovery. And I wonder why all the pedants that criticized us didn't also take it to Disco for not being as midriffy as this.
Good thing Nichelle Nichols is jacked on this show.
Yeah, she looks fucking great. Rock hard abs.
I had ab envy for sure.
I've never had an ab in my entire life. And I'm right there with you, buddy. I was swooning.
Speaking of Uhura, I had sort of expected her to be, throughout this episode, a very tertiary character. I mean, given the years that the show was made and, you know, how this was very much Shatner's show. It's the Shatner and Nimoy show.
And she's a pretty tertiary character in the films as well.
Yeah, but she gets her own story. She does maybe the bravest stuff, because she's alone for most of it, and she gets a pretty badass fight scene at the end.
Right.
So Spock is giving the transporter chief the side eye because he's blaming the difficulty in beaming the crew up on the tech. And the tech is like, there's all this lightning around. I did the best I could. And Spock was like, fuck that. You should have done better.
I like that they beam into the costumes of their Mirror Universe counterparts, too.
Yeah, there was no time for a montage of clothing changes, I guess, in this show. Ben, when you want to agonize someone on the go and you don't have access to an agonizer booth, what you want is a little agonizer brooch. And that's what all of the crew people are wearing. And that's what Spock demands of this transporter tech in order to punish him for his bad transporting.
No, Mr. Spock! I tried, I really tried.
This is an innovation that they didn't have in Disco Universe.
It's like a fun-size candy bar when you want a little agony on the go.
Hunger got you down?
And, like, this is the first of many, many, many scenes of the core crew playing it super cool when they see something fucked up. Like,
yeah.
Spock agonizes this guy against a wall, and this is the second time in maybe 60 seconds where Kirk sees something fucked up and just sort of squints and plays it like it's something he's seen a million times before. I was very impressed by everyone's ability to hold it together.
They are all on board for the idea that they cannot talk freely until they figure out what's going on. And I guess, like, you know, the fact that Spock is walking around with a dagger and a goatee is enough for all of them to realize that. But they play it cool as cucumbers. I'd say that the only little break that any of them shows is at one point while they're still up at the transporter pad, Uhura checks out her manicure.
Yeah.
and shows it to Scotty. She's like, look at this. Holy shit.
That's a great moment.
Yeah. But they come up with the excuse of, little bit of a bumpy transporter ride. Why don't the four of us and none of you go to the six bay and the doc can check us out and make sure everything is spick and span.
This is basically the only thing that Kirk has the power to do is, like, as long as he's out in the open, he and the rest of them are in danger. So he's got to squirrel them away to talk about what the next move is.
Yeah, and Six Bay is the privacy that they need to wrap their heads around this. And they pretty much figure out what's going on in this scene. Like, the, you know, between Scotty and Kirk, they're like, Ion Storm, parallel universe, not our universe, not our ship.
I was really surprised that it was Kirk that came up with the the postulation here. Like, really? You're the guy?
I mean, it bumped me the same way when Lorca did in Discovery, yeah. But then that was explained because Lorca had, gone through this already. Well, everybody knows that Kirk is just a marauding sex fiend. What my theory presupposes is he's also an astrophysical genius.
Yeah, no kidding. I love that they get to McCoy's six bay and he's clearly been experimenting with different colored pixie sticks. His table is covered in powders.
He's like, I gotta invent a new kind of cocaine.
The detail of the acid burn in the table seemed like a strange thing to note because the crew by this point has noticed, you know, the minor differences in their ships. But it takes Dr. McCoy to say, I have the same acid burn on my table, for them to realize what exactly? That maybe their differences are narrower than what they're thinking? That just seemed like a detail that felt like a clanger to me.
I'll be honest, Adam, I'm not a huge fan of mirror universe timeline stories. And I think the reason is, it kind of takes this idea in physics of every quantum states where anytime something could be one thing or the other, it's actually both. And that's right. A bifurcation that makes an alternate universe and every potential outcome happens. And, you know, we're cascading through one particular series of events, which, you know, is a real theory in physics that I'm probably doing a bad job of encapsulating. But the idea that they would be running in parallel at length for a long time and lots of events would happen in the exact same ways and lots of people would be beaming at the exact same corresponding time and stuff, in that's more of a fantasy novel kind of idea than a science idea.
Right. Well, I expected it to be paid off later in the sense that oh shit, the phaser that I squirreled away in Prime Universe is still in behind these wires in this bulkhead. Like, it was just because it was a singular example of similarity between the two.
Yeah.
That was why it felt off to me.
we have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
What? Who are you?
We need to counter them.
Those are Klingons?
So at the end of this scene, they come up with a plan to send Uhura to the bridge. And this is one of the moments of bravery for her that really stuck out, in that I think for the rest of the episode, many of them are together. And Kirk has moments where he's by himself. But for Uhura to be the first one to leave the group and go to the bridge totally freaks her out.
She shows up on the bridge and finds out that it is a pretty hostile workplace with a lot of HR problems.
I could change your mind.
Yeah, there's HR problems, and also it does not look like an OSHA-approved workplace either, because people are limping around and covered in scars. One particularly scarred person is Sulu, who basically looks like he walked down the makeup aisle at a Halloween superstore and just took one of everything. He promises he's going to look better next year at Halloween.
This scar loaf does not hold up. It's real nasty.
Yeah. It looks like it could flap off at any time.
It's not really loaf. It's like a French crepe.
It's not it's doing like, it for Uhura, because Uhura is not into scarred people.
It's getting real grabby with her. He like takes her chin and tries, you know, it's like that hostile, like, why won't you date me?
Yeah, I think he even sits on her lap or something. Like he really breaks her personal space here.
You know, she kind of tries to shame him for being away from his post, and he says, like, cats away, mice will play. And she's about to smack him across the face when Kirk walks in to the bridge. I wish Kirk had timed that a little bit better so that we could have gotten some Uhura smacking the shit out of Sulu action.
Right. It took him a while to get to the bridge because he had to do that salute 50,000 times on his way there. Like, you would think for just to get around the ship, like, you wouldn't have to do that to everyone. Like that.
Yeah. Well, you see, like, in movies when Hitler is walking around, everybody else is doing the full, like, you know, going to full erect arm status, and he's just kind of going, like, just like waving at everybody.
He's breezing by for time.
He's got a very relaxed Sig Heil compared to everyone else. But Kirk really throws himself into the role.
You're right, Ben. That's an example of Hitler doing something right.
It wasn't all bad, Adam. One piece of good judgment he exercised was not taking up too much of his time doing Sig Heil really seriously. Whoever on the set dressing department got a hold of the stencil for making the Imperial logo really went sick. They fucking put that shit on everything.
It's like you really know you're in a Target store when you see that logo on every fucking sign.
Yeah, and it's like so obviously like a spray paint stencil, because, you know, they couldn't get this the whole circle, you know, there are little like breaks in it where the parts of the stencil go through.
Well, I mean, and so many of them are on doors.
Like every single door has it, but also any wall panel that is as wide or wider than a door has it. So
Right. It's
everywhere.
The deal on the bridge is that they've got these Halcon targets in their crosshairs, and they're sort of waiting for Kirk to give the order to fire on the planet. Because in this universe, the Halcons have also denied their request for dilithium crystals. And the difference in this universe is that that is an offense punishable by death. Death by bombardment.
And Kirk, you know, being the good guy that he is looking for ways to stall. And, you know, I think that, like, this was a pretty cool scene because they don't quite know their way around enough yet to find, like, good, plausible in-universe reasons to stall. So he's just stalling and saying, like, hey, I'll tell you why I'm stalling when I'm good and ready. I'm the captain of this ship.
Boy, I was really expecting the Charon to uncloak in front of them and bombard the planet for them. Like, there are a number of story beats here that are very similar to what we get in the Disco Show.
I totally had the same thought, Adam. Like, when is somebody going to come blow up this planet, whether they like it or not?
Right, right.
Seemed like the thing that was going to happen.
So he allows the targets to leave the range of fire of the ship. And this is noted by just about everyone on the bridge, and especially Spock, who is like, well, that is actually
a serious breach of orders, Captain.
And I'm going to have to note that in your file. And
this is going to go on your permanent record, young man.
Yeah, and in Spock's way, he carries himself the way Prime Universe Spock does. But what he's saying is the difference. What he's encouraging is what's strange. And that's, I think, what makes him scary, is because he is so familiar in every other way. Like, it's sort of like what makes horror movie villains so much more scary when they're not screaming maniacs, but instead, like, coldly sober, tactical thinker types.
Lowering the lotion in the basket types.
Right. Well, I think maybe James Gunn is like in the middle of the two poles, I think. Because he's screaming a lot too, Ben.
I feel like he can pass for either one, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like he is cool as a cucumber when Clarice knocks on the door and asks about...
As cool as a cucumber shoved between your legs while you're walking around in an open robe.
They get up on FaceTime with Tharn, and Tharn in the Mirror Universe is real bedraggled. He's not sleeping well. Didn't run a comb through his hair this morning.
He has not taken his vitamins in this universe.
Yeah, and Kirk is like, "Hey, Doug, you got a little bit more time to think this over." Tharn in the Mirror Universe is the exact same Tharn. Like, this is one thing that I thought would be kind of fun, is if the Hulkins were the opposite, if they were like, "Fuck you. We'll kill every last one of you. We have a perfect history of violence.
We're going to kill you by staying too long when we come to visit." Turning your TVs on too loud.
We're gonna include you on group texts with our friends.
Oh, man, that's a big one. Kirk, right after this, sort of excuses himself.
He's, "I gotta go take a shit, guys.
I shall be in my quarters."
Boy, not firing on the Hulkins really makes a guy have to take a great big dump.
He goes with Chekhov on the elevator, and you can see that Chekhov is up to something, just in the performance, and also the parenthetical, suspenseful music playing.
And also the rack in super close to his face.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is this moment is super subtle. and when Kirk... I thought it was going to be a knife fight in the elevator, and sure, I thought that I was going to find out that thing that happened in Disco was a reference to this, but Kirk steps off the elevator and gets the open palm to the nose punch.
I was legit shocked by this. Were you? Like, the blocking of this is perfect.
Yeah, it's good. That's a punch that I was told over and over again all throughout my childhood, that if you got hit like that, it would jam your nose bone into your brain and you'd be dead.
Yeah.
It's the, like, one-shot kill. You see it in Star Trek a lot.
In this case, it just leaves Kirk with a little bit of a flavor saver of blood under his lower lip.
Yeah, he's a little dazed, and Chekhov announces his dastardly plan to kill Kirk to, you know, to take over power. Or, you know, if Kirk is out of the picture, everybody gets a 1-point bump in pay.
He's got like a crew of your dad's friends to help him out, too.
He really does.
There's never been a thicker crew of like barbecue buddies.
Denizens of the basement pool room are Star Trek fighting in the hallway. One of them turns out to be loyal to Kirk and, you know, breaks a pool cue. That Bud Light stained glass lamp shatters. It's real. Hot Star Trek fight.
Right.
It's funny, like when somebody shoots a phaser on this show, they grab the freeze frame and then draw the phaser line onto the freeze frame.
Yeah.
Because they did not have the technology to like track motion.
That's fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't, so, like, when you describe it that way, it sounds like shit, but I didn't think it looked shitty at all.
No, it's well done for what it is.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of fast cuts, and they find the right moments and stuff. And once this guy has taken care of Chekhov's little buddies, a couple more blue shirts that are even more of your dad's friends than the other guys come off the elevator. And they're like, oh, great, cool. So are we all up for some cool promotions then? And Kirk is like, yeah, you guys are good in my book.
I think this is the first time in the episode he kind of pivots into Mirror Kirk a little bit in that he punches this guy out and then he gives him an action movie line when he's done.
Not on my ship.
And that's a real great moment for him. This is the moment where I think he starts making the case that if he had to live here, he could.
He sends Chekhov off to the agonizer booth.
Yes, the booth. Carry on.
And then goes and meets up with McCoy and Scotty, I guess in his quarters. And they do some computering, some good old-fashioned Star Trek computering where they put in like several pieces of data and they get the computer to put a program onto a disk that can recreate the conditions of the trans-dimensional transporter.
Yeah, and I guess in this universe, they have the Lost in Space robot as the ship's computer. The voice is pretty janky here.
Yeah, ready. Meep boop, meep boop.
It's like when you're in pre-algebra and you figure out that you can work an equation backwards and forwards.
Right.
The idea that you could describe a problem to the computer and then ask the computer to engineer backwards what happened and then put the solution on a disk that you can just take somewhere else on the ship. That's great.
Yeah.
That's technology that Enterprise D doesn't have.
Programming is easy.
Yeah.
I feel like Enterprise D does have this, though. Like, Enterprise D can accidentally make a holodeck character that can take over the ship.
Right.
They just, like, I feel like they know where the bear traps are better in the future.
They rarely ask the D, like, how anything happened. They're super content to try to figure out the solution themselves.
Yeah. Maybe that's just how they get off, you know? Like, Geordi can't achieve orgasm without actually puzzling through the problem himself.
Oh, yeah. That warp bubble. So big.
I'm guilty of a terrible crime, Doctor.
For a good portion of the episode, just like in the Discovery eps, I was really wondering if we were going to see Mirror Universe counterparts in the Prime Universe. And sure as shit, they pay that off here in a really fun, like almost throwaway scene. You only
it's
get
like
a minute.
Smash cut to Spock throwing them in the brig. Like,
yeah.
It's awesome.
Are you all executed?
I think not.
It's super efficient because it's that tiny set. It's one-minute scene, and it's basically their four counterparts screaming inside a brig.
Yeah, it's the one standing set from the show that they didn't redress by spraying that stupid logo everywhere.
Yeah, tons of fun.
Yeah, good times.
So the idea is they got to split up again, right? Because Scotty's got to go. He's got to go figure out a place to stick this new program. It's going to involve taking warp engines offline.
Yeah. And Scotty's been having trouble. Like, he was trying to sabotage the phasers so that they wouldn't have to kill the Hulkins earlier and didn't get very far. So this is a stressful situation where he has to, like, sneak around in engineering and do this.
Yeah, the stress is getting multiplied because as they get more and more separated, that's how things get more and more dangerous. And they're doing a great job of heightening the tension here. I really felt at this moment in the episode that things were getting very stressful.
Well, the only way to really relieve stress, Adam, is with a nice sexy time with a sexy lady.
Yeah.
And that's what Kirk finds when he goes to his room.
Yeah, he finds the fair Marlena Moreau waiting. And in the way that she's sleeping on his bed, you wouldn't think that her hair would be perfect upon standing up, but...
Oh, but it is, Adam.
Yeah, she's looking great. She must have only laid down a moment ago.
Boy, the women's hair in this episode is really something else.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, more length and volume than is humanly possible at every turn.
This seems like the most difficult scene for Kirk to act as if, because in every other moment, there were multiple people to sort of take cues from. And when confronted with Marlena, he only has her.
You must know what you're doing. You always do.
This seems like the most difficult thing for him to do, because she's not giving him anything to work with. He's trying to figure out if they're lovers, which they clearly are. He's trying to figure out if she is like a crew member even, and what exactly she has the power to do over him.
She's got a rank, but her job seems to be hang out in captain's quarters and be available for sex, maybe.
And also, like, kill people with a computer screen that they have in the corner of his quarters, which is fantastical.
It's the Tantalus field. So it's revealed that MU Kirk has this Tantalus field device that he stole from some alien race. And what it is a surveillance system where he can, like, set the screen to focus on anybody on the ship and then press a green button and they disappear. So this is the secret to Kirk's power, is that if anybody gets a little big for their britches, he can sort them out, you know, without having to knife fight them in a corridor.
It's a power that's almost Q-like. It's so powerful.
I press it, and he dies.
And yet he trusts his captain's woman with it, you know? Like, you'd think if you had that sort of technology, you'd keep it to yourself. But it's clear that...
She knows the two places on the wall panel to push to open it up and get at it.
Yeah, Marlena is basically the operator of this device. And it's Kirk that sort of points at people and makes it happen.
He gets a call at this point from Spock, who's like, hey, listen, blew your little stalling tactics with the Hulkins by the folks over at Starfleet Command. They're not that happy, and you've got 3 hours to kill everybody, or I'm supposed to kill you. I'm just letting you know as a courtesy.
It's like getting a wake-up call at a hotel. Like, thanks. Like, it's almost exactly that way, because you hate to get that call, because yeah, it's 4 a.m. when you need to get one.
Yeah.
But you also appreciate it, because it hips you to something you need to know.
I would love to hear war stories from the person who does the wake-up calls at a hotel. Like, what kind of abuse they get flung back at them. You know, like weary business travelers who went to sleep with 4.5 whiskeys in them and then wake up at 4 a.m. and go like, fuck you! The Hamilton account will take care of itself!
We're constantly pitching new podcast ideas to each other, Ben. I think that's a good one. It's just 15-minute episodes. I'm into that. Don't steal that.
I feel like Radiotopia would give us some money to produce that, right?
Yeah.
If we get some sound-rich editing techniques.
Oh, so rich. That rich hotel room audio pastiche.
Oh, man. Last week, I was traveling for work, and I stayed in a hotel room that was just like, it seemed like all of the sounds in the entire hotel somehow focused themselves in my room. Like every drunken idiot walking down the hallway at 2 a.m. And
your room was an audio vanishing point.
Yeah. I also at one point called down to the front desk because like I got in late and I just needed to like eat something quick and go to bed. And I called down and I said, do you guys have in-room dining at this hotel? I can't find a menu in my room. And the guy at the front desk said, I mean, you're allowed to take food to your room.
I love that guy. I know how angry that must have made you, but that is hilarious.
Oh, thank you. Cool.
Back when I used to work retail, I got in trouble with management for a customer came up to me and asked where the print cartridges were, and we were both standing right in front of them. And I thought it was a bit, because it was so unbelievable. Like, basically, this entire aisle was print cartridges. And I looked at her with the face that I often have, and you've seen it before, and I was like, you mean these? And then 20 minutes later, a manager came over and was like, yeah, we had a complaint about you with regard to the print cartridges. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, let's reenact exactly what happened. Like, and I'll show you how ridiculous her complaint
That always goes over well with a manager. The get a load of how funny I really was defense.
No, but it was a bit.
All I do is
bit. No matter what. Yeah, unfit for retail, the Adam Pranica story.
Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore, and you really can't tell your story, tell the story of what you do, and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast. And we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
What?
What's happening?
What?
No! What's all this?
I'm trying to save you.
What is this?
So we've got like some new information. There is a death ray device. The clock is ticking. Kirk radios up to his buddies in the engineering section, Scotty and McCoy, and says, like, hey, listen, like, we're in big trouble because Spock is going to kill me in 3 hours. And Scotty's like, you don't know the half of it, dude. If we don't beam out of here in 30 minutes, we are all fucked because the window of, like, you know, field density or whatever is closing. And if it goes back to normal, we are not going to be able to punch through into our own universe.
Kirk is like, I came up with this whole idea. Of course I know what field density is. Jesus, Scotty.
Everybody knows I know what field density is.
Of course we do, sir!
It's so hard to tell how much information Kirk needs based on that earlier scene where he comes up with a whole idea.
And the complicating issue is they're going to have to divert warp power to power up the transporter for this thing. And that is going to raise eyebrows on the bridge. Like, people will notice when they do this. So they need to figure out a way to distract Sulu, who's the chief of security. And they need to do this all in the next 30 minutes. So
I was pretty impressed with, like, the octagon of conflict that the show constructed. Because, like, it's Spock sort of for and against Kirk. It's Sulu against Spock. It's Sulu against Uhura. It's Marlena
against Kirk.
If you were to tell me that we would have fairly developed conflicts between all of these characters and you only had 45 minutes to set that up and also conclude the story, I would have said that you would have needed two episodes. But
this episode is kind of a Swiss watch. Like, I reread the plot synopsis this morning.
Yeah, did it take you like 20 minutes the way it took me? It's so crazy to go back into TOS eps. There's substantial research to be done on these.
We have a little scene where Spock figures out that Scotty and McCoy are doing something, but he can't figure out what they're doing because they put like a security lock on the program that only Scotty and Kirk have access to. And he starts talking to Sulu about Kirk and the three people he beamed up with are up to something.
When you're on a crew where death moves you up a rung, like, every single conversation ends up being like lowly Sulu. He is as close to the captain's chair as he could ever be. Like, he's seeing people with a chance to die ahead of him, and he's just relishing that.
But like, they're also like really afraid of Kirk because the, you know, I think it's Sulu that says his enemies have a way of disappearing.
Yeah, everyone knows that he has a secret power.
Yeah.
I'm in command. I could order this.
So back to Kirk and Marlena, who has changed into a very revealing, like, it's basically like a bikini with a sheer cover-up.
Right.
More than a dress. You know, Kirk, we've just found out, has a ticking clock and needs to be in the transporter room in 10 minutes, but spends a good amount of time, like, talking Marlena through a little, like, crisis of self that she's having, and, you know, tries to give her some affirmations and let her know that she is the captain's woman and that she doesn't need to, you know, go bang her way through the entire Starfleet to get to be some other captain's woman.
This is one of my favorite scenes in the ep, because they're saying a lot of things literally, but they're also meaning things differently than how they're saying them. And
yeah,
they're sort of confusing each other, and Kirk kind of confuses her with a kiss.
Yeah, she totally thinks he's calling her a loose woman, and he's like, no, I just think you're very capable.
Yeah, I really like that. I liked how their confusion with each other didn't lead to a revelation. Like, the subterfuge remains. She can tell that he's different and has changed somehow, but there's not that reveal that is like, oh, you're definitely not the man that I knew. You're just a man that I used to know in a weird way.
It's been a long time since he kissed her like that.
Yeah.
And that really puts her on Kirk's side, I think, that scene. Like, it seems like a long time to spend when the clock is ticking, you know? Like, the tension right before this scene gets ratcheted up to 11. And then this scene is, like, long and does not really seem to have a lot to do with Kirk's problem. It's to do with her problems.
I almost feel like they stopped the story here and then wrote the end. And then, like, this scene exists so that Marlena can get them out of the pickle at the very last scene.
Yeah.
And you don't allow that unless you have this scene a few scenes before that. Like, the math of the show depends on this moment. And in a linear fashion, it doesn't make sense that Kirk is there. But, like, in total, you need this scene to happen.
Right. So Uhura needs to distract Sulu so that he doesn't notice when the one amber button on his panel lights up. And the way she chooses to do that is by appealing to his romantic overtures and then quickly changing tacks and pulling out the knife from her boot scabbard and saying, I changed my mind, asshole.
This is a very hostile work environment.
Yeah. She's like the only woman in a room full of dudes who are all like leaning all over the walls and equipment and everything, like, yeah. And she like literally backs out of there with the knife.
A moment that really impressed me about this scene is that there's like three security people up bridge toward the turbo lift.
Yeah.
And they don't attempt to stop her or like hold her back or hold her down or anything. Like, I love that Sulu acts alone, and I like that Uhura is given an equal respect to be a fuck up on the bridge as anyone else in this universe. And I thought that was great. Right. Like, there, yeah, no one was ganging up on anyone, and that felt fair and good to me in a surprising way. Like, because this shit could have gotten so dark if like Sulu signals the security guys in the back to hold down Uhura and then like there's an assault or something. Like, how fucked up would that be?
It's kind of a cool thing about the Mirror Universe is like everybody is down to let everybody resolve their conflicts, you know?
Yeah. Like, the free agency is what keeps things fair, almost. That everyone is out for their own ends keeps things somewhat equal in a fun way.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Klingons? Those are Klingons?
What the hell is going on this ship?
I have no idea.
What is this?
Sulu did not notice the warp power transfer, and looks like we're home free. And Kirk is in the transporter room modifying the controls when Spock gets the drop on him. Takes Kirk into six bay where the other three are waiting for him. And Spock is like, oh, I get it now. The landing party. There's something wrong with all four of you.
The clarity of his thought is contrasted with the grainy blimp footage that we get in the fight scene that follows.
Yeah,
because we go way up high for some of this fight scene. And there are some stunt performers not wearing the right facial hair, maybe not even wearing the right uniform.
It's like the fight scene in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka.
Yeah.
Everybody is just obviously a different person.
That was my fight.
In an episode that I didn't feel like had aged particularly poorly, this is the moment where things really went wrong. I mean, it's all the Star Trek fighting you've come to know and love over the years, but intercut with that stunt work that is like not truly necessary. Because the close-up stunts with the primary cast look pretty good. And I think you could intercut all of those without having to go up high just to see someone thrown over a six-bay table, you know? Like, that stunt isn't good enough to cut away to.
Right. It's like people just doing somersaults. It's like,
yeah.
You can get the same effect by just moving the camera fast and going in close as people swing their arms wildly.
Yeah. Pretty fun. A lot of those, you know, dropping an axe handle on someone's back or like the open palm punch, like a lot of like straight across the line Star Trek fighting here.
Yeah, this is the filmmaking of people who know that the only people who ever watch this will be watching it on crappy TVs from the 60s.
The roundhouse that Admiral Quinn created for himself has not been discovered yet, unfortunately. Not a lot of legwork.
So they kick Spock's ass. I think they like break a skull over his head or something. Is that what it is? Or was it just like a ceramic pot?
I think you want to decorate your workspace with a couple of personal items, Ben.
It, yeah.
Keeps your zone of influence cheap and cheery.
Just check in with HR to make sure nothing violates company policy.
Let's other people know you have a bit of a personality and maybe some interests outside the workplace.
Yeah. You think Kathy is hilarious. Always seems like swimsuit season is coming up.
Yeah, I know. Knack. It's always swimsuit season in the Mirror Universe.
The way Spock gets taken out is pretty rugged and pretty brutal. And Scotty's like, hey, guys, we got to go. Like, the door is closing on us being able to get back. And Bones is like, no way, dude. Like, this guy is going to die unless I treat him. So you guys need to help me get him on the table right now.
And this starts a fairly pronounced countdown scene. And the conflict is that McCoy's sense of medical duty in not doing any harm, the Hippocratic Oath of the Prime Universe, I guess, is portable to any universe that he goes to.
Well, it's the same, like, it's McCoy being confronted with the same kind of dilemma that Kirk was confronted with, right? Like, Kirk is not going to take out a planet full of people, even if it isn't in his universe. It's like, he can't live with himself if he does that.
Right. And so McCoy makes the case that he just needs 5 of the 15 minutes to fix Spock up. And that will allow enough of a cushion for everyone to get to the transporter room with him the last one to show up so that he can live with himself if, in fact, they're able to get back to Prime Universe.
Right. But this delay is enough for Sulu and a bunch of his security guys to now get the drop on them. And they hut into the six bay. It's not looking great for the gang. But then Marlena starts pushing buttons on the Tantalus field, disappearing Sulu's men in order from least important first.
She's got a code.
Yeah, Sulu's, you know, red shirts first, and then Sulu's like, all right, well, this isn't going great. So he still tries to knife Kirk, but Kirk does the karate chop to the forearm, disarms him, and they knock him out. And Bones is like, all right, why don't you three go on ahead, get the transporter room ready for me. I got to finish up with Spock. Spock kind of like comes to on the table and forces a mind meld with Bones, because Spock, like, Mirror Universe Spock cannot wrap his mind around why anybody would help him or why the gang is behaving the way they are. This scene where Spock wakes up, you really get a nice shot of his eye shadow.
A man must also have the power.
I thought it felt a lot like Picard waking up as Locutus. Like the way he grabs McCoy's forearm felt very similar to me. The way he wordlessly does that, especially. I don't know, that made me think of that scene. Really intense moment when he gets up and sort of pushes McCoy against the wall. McCoy doesn't say anything. It's the silence in this scene that is especially heady to me.
Not the last time Spock and McCoy would share minds.
Yeah.
So the other three show up in the transporter room, and Marlena is in there waiting for them with a phaser. She wants to go with. She's like heard over the Tantalus what the real story is and realizes that Kirk is not the MU Kirk that she's been the captain's woman of. But she likes the idea of this prime universe, and she wants to go with him. And he says, like, listen, we got enough power for four people, and I got to take the four that we came with.
She kind of presents a Kobau kind of plan to Kirk. Maybe we can start a new life. You take me with you.
If you don't get that reference, go ahead and listen to our Friendly Fire bonus episode, which is also in the Max Fun Donor bonus feed.
I really felt bad for her. Like, it would have been cool if she was able to go back with them, I think. But this isn't that kind of show.
No. But yeah, a lot of the time, people that get to see how good it is in Prime Federation don't get to then go live in Prime Federation.
Yeah. What a tease.
My people were biologically determined for one purpose alone. To sense the coming of death.
What?
To sense the coming of death.
This doesn't make any sense.
I sense it coming now.
None of it makes any sense. Sounds like nonsense to me.
This is where Uhura gets to do a little action of her own, disarming Marlena, who, you know, draws down on them.
Yeah, Marlena took her eyes off her target, and
yeah,
you can't do that.
The boots that the ladies wear, an officer position anyways, are like full thigh length boots. Like they come up to mid thigh,
mm-hmm.
and at the top there's a little scabbard for their dagger. And so Uhura pulls the dagger out of Marlena's boot and takes her phaser away.
They do a good job of blocking the action toward the camera here. Like when you think about how a fight works, so often it's two people facing each other. But because Marlena's facing the transporter console and Uhura's behind her, like the action comes at the camera in a really fun way in this scene,
yeah,
when she disarms her.
So they're getting ready to beam out, and Spock comes in with McCoy, and he's seen the real McCoy. He's seen the McCoy from Prime Universe from the inside, and offers to operate the transporter for them because he had turned off everything to save himself some time so he could get up there.
I really love his reason for doing this. It wasn't like he melded with McCoy and went like, oh, you guys are so good. Like, we're so not. And oh, it's such a tragedy that our universes are so different. Like, there's a practical reason. He needs his captain back.
Yeah.
And I love that about his reason for help, that it's not altruistic, which would be a total character change for what we know about people in the mirror universe. Like, this seems true and good.
Yeah, it's the right way to write the character, and also the right way to write Kirk's character. Is Kirk, you know, plays a little logic chess right before he hops on the transporter pad. He says, like, listen, dude, like, there is no defensible way to justify the political system in your universe. It's bad, and it's not sustainable. You guys are going to fall apart eventually, and it's going to mean a lot of death and a lot of needless suffering. So just put that in your little pipe and smoke it. All right, I'm out. Tip your bartender.
He does the blackjack dealer thing. He just sort of claps his hands, waves them a couple of times.
Yeah, shows them to the cameras, turns them over.
All right, Mirror Universe, Kirk will be your next captain.
If you've got to win, you got to hit.
They hop on the transporter pad and they rematerialize on good old Prime Enterprise, and goatee-less Spock greets them. And the button on the episode is they're hanging out on the bridge, and Kirk is like, Spock, you're a real sharp tech. How did you know that our counterparts from the mirror universe weren't really us? And Spock says that because they were barbarians, they couldn't play like they were civilized in the same way that civilized people can play like they're barbarians.
Sure would have been interesting to see the flip side. Like, they could have done this episode twice, right? Back to back.
That would be cool.
And you see mirror universe crew try to escape their own situation. Like, what if Spock had not brigged them and instead they had free run of the ship? Would have been an action show.
Kirk and Bones start kind of busting Spock's chops about how the beard gave mirror Spock character. And
it's a good thing Spock doesn't process feelings like humans, because they really fucking make fun of him for like the last 2 minutes of the show.
Yeah. But he gives as good as he gets, because he says that he thought that the brutality and savagery of their mirror universe counterparts were splendid examples of Homo sapiens.
Yeah.
The very flower of humanity.
He double middles them with his logic. At this moment, a Prime Universe Marlena shows up on the bridge with a pad for him to sign, and Kirk like double takes, like a guy working a construction site. Like, who is that DJ Scat Cat in the... he basically DJ Scat Cats her and like pursues her across the bridge after a moment of recognition.
I think we could become friends.
Like, there are mirror universe elements to the Prime Universe, and one of them is Kirk's free ability to hit on whoever he wants in the workplace.
He does indeed have that, Adam.
Did you like this episode?
I did. I was really tired when I was watching it, so I was like, you know, and the pacing of TOS episodes is so slow compared to Discovery episodes, for example, that I definitely had to like make a conscious effort to pay attention and not like look at my phone and shit.
Oh yeah.
But the story was fun, and I think it's well written. I think the pacing and you know, like there's stuff that's hokey about it, but there's also stuff that totally holds up and is good. So
yeah,
with all the caveats of mirror universe anything, I liked this. I think this is maybe a better episode as a one-off than the wellspring for an entire series of things that happen in this universe.
Mm.
But a fun one-off, in my opinion.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
I am surprised at how much I really liked this episode, because I approached it from the perspective of a guy who never wanted to watch a TOS episode.
Yeah, we talked about the idea of doing this as our bonus for the donors, and we were both like, all right.
Yeah, I expected it to be a slog of hokiness and for it to be not fun at all. But this episode held my attention, and I was very excited to see it. And it makes me excited for the possibility of watching more TOS episodes, to be honest. And that is a feeling that really surprised me. I didn't think I would ever come to a point where I would be interested in doing that.
Whoa.
And I think it's opened me up to the possibility. So I think one of the things I'd like to explore the possibility of with you is watching maybe the Harry Mudd episode, watching maybe the other Mirror Universe episode in TOS, and doing a little bit of that dabbling while we do the Discovery show. Not committing fully to watching TOS, because who would do that? But it's got me interested in seeing more. I think this is a fun ep. Maybe it's an outlier for TOS in that I've been duped, and that could very well may be the case. But if I was duped, then they did a hell of a job here, because I thought Mirror Mirror was a lot of fun.
We have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
Your tongue is too human.
I am programmed in multiple techniques.
Your tongue is too human.
A broad variety of pleasuring.
What's happening?
What is going on?
I'm getting very close to... I sense it coming now.
Ben, this is a bonus episode from 2018, which means off of the assembly line, it did not have priority when messages, but... Now that we've resurrected it, now that we've dug it up out of 4 years of bonus episodes and surfaced it like a sunken battleship,
We're ready to fill it up with priority one messages, Ben. What do you say we get over to the inbox and see what we got?
I thought you'd never ask.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, our first priority one message is from Ducky, the dude who called Ben a fake fan on Twitter.
Ooh.
It is to Ben. Just Ben.
You know what's funny about that is that when I listened to this episode, we commented on how many people had taken great umbrage with the idea that we hadn't really watched TOS episodes at all, and that this was some sort of way to satisfy that angry horde. Ducky being among them, I'm sure.
I think one of the most frequent comments we received about Star Trek Discovery was, why don't you watch the original series episodes that have stuff to do with Mirror Universe? Then you know as much as I do or whatever. And that's exactly the tone in which those tweets were written. Like, very nasal, condescending tweets right there.
The message goes like this. I'm sorry. It was a bit. Also, sorry for crossing the streams, but on TGG, you wouldn't see this till the Bell Riots. I'm a BFOD from way back, Max Fund donor since your second Max Fund drive, P1 purchaser, RSVP wedding B-Day, and been at all Boston live shows. The balcony at once was the best seat, TBH. Hope these scarves soothe the psychic damage. Wow.
I don't know if many people would agree with you, Ducky, about the balcony seats at the once, especially the ones like in the restaurant up there that I think some friends of DeSoto were sat in.
Yeah, that was not our finest venue choice in history. But Ducky, I don't know that I was calling you out in particular. I've been called a fake fan many, many times on Twitter.
Right.
So,
do you have Ducky muted?
I don't know. I don't know what Ducky didn't include their Twitter handle, so I don't know what specific tweet they're talking about.
I feel like the apology is incomplete without the Twitter handle, Ducky.
Yeah. Yeah, include a link next time.
You know what? Ducky's actually smart. I wouldn't want to put my Twitter handle on this show either.
Yeah. Do you think Ducky is even going to hear this? Because they're an OG Max Fun supporter, so they've probably heard this bonus episode. They're probably not going to re-listen.
You know what? Ducky's probably in the same position we were an hour ago when we were watching Mirror Mirror going, it sounds familiar. Did this happen? I think we're all reliving this moment together.
Yeah. Ducky, I just want to say thank you so much for the support. And if I misinterpreted a bit online, know that I didn't take it personally or carry it with me. And I appreciate the scarves to soothe my psyche.
God, listen to you, Ben. You're in a really good mental space. Very aspirational. Ben, our second priority one message is from Billy. It is to Joey. The message goes like this. I blame you.
Whoa.
You're the reason I've spent hundreds of hours in multiple live shows listening to these two chuckle fucks blather about Star Trek. And now I've given them $100 to tell you happy birthday, not on your birthday. Thanks for introducing me to the Uxbridge Shimoda family of products. I love you, but I may never forgive you. Road drop, please.
Hey, we appreciate Joey as well for A, ruining Billy's life, and B, putting people onto the podcast.
You can call me a chuckle fuck, but it'll cost you $100. That money supports the show.
Indeed. Thanks to everyone who got a P1 on the episode today. We really appreciate it. If you'd like to get one, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Adam, did you have a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
If we were ever to do TOS as a greatest gen series, I feel like there's no way Kirk could be beat over the long term. And I'm just going to like start it off with Kirk. This entire situation should be terrifying, but he's the guy who sort of holds it together for the crew. And I like seeing that. Like Uhura scared, Scotty and McCoy are seeing shit that's freaking them out. But there are times in this episode that I feel like Kirk is adjusting
and playing the long game in that if he has to stay, could he do it? And I think he is uniquely equipped to be able to survive in this universe with very few adjustments. And there's a fun factor to that that maybe is just a projection from me onto him. But like, there are moments where I feel like he's enjoying this in a fucked up way. There's like his makeouts with Marlena, his Star Trek fight in the hallway, like how good he is at not betraying his true feelings to these people who, upon discovering him, would kill him immediately. He was super competent in a way I wasn't expecting. I thought he would be clobber him up Kirk. But he seemed more of the reasonable thinker than I ever imagined him to be. And maybe that's anti-Shimoda in a weird way too. But I guess for the first reason, primarily, I'm making my Shimoda Kirk. What about you?
I don't know if this quite counts as a daily double. It's kind of a daily double edge case, but I'm going to go ahead and say it does. My Shimoda is Mirror Universe Kirk.
Oh, fun.
For the reason that he let his special lady know where his death ray was.
Right.
Like, that is an amazing amount of trust within the context of a super untrusting mirror universe to extend to somebody. And it is like, it's revealed that it is not a good thing to trust her with at all, because the second he leaves the room, she fires that bad boy up and is following him around the ship with it.
There are some things that we don't disclose to our wives, Ben, and where the death ray is one of those things.
Yeah. I got to go into the other room for, I don't know, masturbation.
That was an extra long shower you took there, Ben. What was that about? That was not the death ray.
Yeah,
that was
definitely anything but the death ray.
Which I don't have, mind you.
Wow, Adam, an episode that predates Edward Larkin's. That was a lot of fun to listen back to. But, you know, we got to do our homework. And if we forgot our homework, we got to go back and redo it, right?
I agree. You know, in meditation, one of the instructions is to be your childlike self, your most open puppy-like self.
Sure.
When I listen back on you and me doing the show from 4 years ago, listen to those puppies. Just playing around in new Star Trek, not having any idea what would be in store for them 4 years later.
We truly didn't. We didn't know what we were staring down the barrel of.
No, and that is a great big, long, dirty, hairy barrel of Star Trek that we were staring down.
Now, in all this excitement, I kind of lost track of whether there's 5 new Star Trek series or 6. So you got to ask yourself, do I feel lucky? Well, do ya, punk?
I feel very lucky to be doing the show with you, Ben, and very lucky to be receiving the grace of the Friends of DeSoto for playing a rerun this week.
Yeah, a bit of a clip show this week, but hopefully it was a fun new one for a lot of people. And if you liked that, there's tons more stuff behind the paywall in the bonus feed. So, you know.
Yeah, where can people find the Uxbridge Shimoda-centric bonus feed that's just our shows?
So if you're not yet a supporter, go to MaximumFun.org/join and set up a membership. And then if you are already a member or have just become a member, you can go to MaximumFun.org/DeSoto. And when you sign in there, it will just filter to our shows. And all of the bonus episodes we've ever made for either of them are in there. So go check them out.
Yeah. And in some cases like this, they go back many, many years.
Indeed. And we're making new bonus episodes every month, so
that's right.
Lots more to look forward to. With that, we're going to throw to our producer, Wendy Pretty, to close out the show.
Here's 4 years ago, Wendy, to end the show in her best NPR voice.
Take it away, Wendy.
The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. The Max Fun bonus episode from 2018 that we featured this week was edited by Rob Schulte, and you can find more of his work in the extensive back catalog of this very podcast. There's so much fun stuff in there, so if you've just recently found the show, definitely get into those stacks. There's not going to be any pod next week for The Greatest Discovery, but Lower Decks Season 3 is coming up, and we've got a full season rewatch on the schedule. Finn and Adam will be back on August 23rd with a recap of Lower Decks Season 2 ahead of the Season 3 premiere. So rewatch with us, and we will see you back here in a couple of weeks. Thanks to Adam Ragusea for all of the original music we use on this show. He's got a podcast and a YouTube cooking channel. Just search for Adam Ragusea. And thank you to Bill Tilley. He manages the social media for Uxbridge Shimoda. Use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery to talk about the show online. And make sure you're following at Greatest Trek on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more of The Greatest Discovery.
Occasionally rub two fucking brain cells together on a Tuesday. Hey, Utah, give me two brain cells.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.